Hi everybody, hope you're well. My name is Jim Carroll. Welcome you to a weekly podcast from the Banter team. During the recent Big Grill Barbecue Festival in Dublin's Herbert Park, we hosted a number of banter sessions, and one of them saw us talking music and food. We were joined by the legendary Levi Roots, the equally infamous DJ Yoda, and the notorious Billy Scurry to talk about the Venn diagram between food and music and why so many musicians have a blast when it comes to grub. Hi everybody, welcome along to the very final banter at the Big Grill for 2015. My name is Jim Carroll. I'm joined here by three fantastic musicians and who are also fantastic food fans as well and fantastic food entrepreneurs in many ways. To my immediate right, we have Levi Roots, the one and only. Next to him, we have Duncan, aka DJ Yoda. And finally, from the mean streets of Dublin 1, we have the great, the one and only Billy Scurry. Please give them a round of applause. All right, the purpose of this conversation really is to discuss the Venn diagram overplay between food and music. Between food and music, right?
Lovely.
Let's start with kind of like, I mean, the three of you. Let's start with Levi. You know, at what stage did kind of like, I suppose, food, you realized that there was an exchange between food and music going on, that you could get as much enjoyment out of food as you did out of music?
Well, I think My sort of soiree into the whole music and food thing started because I grew up in Jamaica, where music and food have always gone together. I think the whole music thing, my grandmother was a Baptist church choir leader and also a fantastic cook in our local village as well. So I had the best of both worlds, you know, from her, the music side, which gospel came into my life perhaps when I was about 8 or 9. And then she taught me to cook her special relish that she had that used to sort of keep the whole village sort of going in our local Clarendon, where we live. So that was it, because she was very much into music and food. And for some reason, being the youngest, I think she knew she probably would never see me again. You know, finally, when I left her to come to the UK, then that would be it. Her 6 grandchildren, she looked after them and sent them. Every year, one of us would be sent off to the UK. And there was I finally with her. And I don't know whether or not she knew I would have taken the sauce on to a next level.
Yeah.
But she wanted to teach me about music and food. And of course, that stayed with me until now. And as I said in my cooking thing, it's not about chucking the guitar in the food when I say put some music in the food. It's about the vibe that you have when you're cooking. I believe if you leave that vibe behind what music brings, the food becomes very boring. Or if you have guests around, it's a very boring party if you don't have that music vibe in you with the food together.
Yeah. Duncan, what about you? I mean, like, you know, what part does kind of food play in your life as a DJ?
It's really interesting. It's something that's so innate and basic that you can start to think about it in very culture terms, and there's so much to say about it. But really, when you strip it right back, you look at a newborn baby and children, and the biggest motivators for anyone are music and food. They are the things that you can motivate people with, the positive things that you can motivate people with. But having said that, when I was a teenager, maybe I wouldn't have classed myself as a foodie particularly. I was really into my music. I was obsessed with music, collecting records and DJing. And I'm lucky enough that the DJing has led me to loads of travel, and I've DJed all around the world. And I think it's the travel that really got me into food, because I started going to Japan to DJ and the deep south of America to DJ, you know, everywhere that you can think of, and trying food everywhere. And then I started to realize, well, I've got this opportunity. I'm all around the world. I want to try the best food everywhere. And then that really got me into it, and really kind of like I started to notice the parallels between the two things.
Did that kind of like immersion in food make you realize as well that, like, a bit like Levi, that there was something, like, besides DJing, there could have been, like, I mean, sidelines in terms of food? Was that, did anybody
100%,
strike you?
Like, as I started getting into cooking and everything, one of the first things I did was for, I can't remember if it was Mix Mag magazine or DJ or one of those, but they filmed me doing a DJ set that was all about food. So I was playing all songs that were about various food types while simultaneously cooking my dinner. So I had the turntables on one side and the hob on the right of it, and I was DJing and then, like, cooking vegetables and salmon on the right and doing it all at the same time. So I've always been interested in taking DJing out of the kind of more where you would always expect it, which is at a club at 1 in the morning. Like, my thing is, like, where else can you take DJing? Can you take it to the kitchen? Can you take it, like, with an orchestra? Like, so that really appealed to me, that side of it.
I mean, Billy, you took you took the art of DJing from the kitchen and from the Temple of Sound into kind of that into real kitchens. You know, I mean, yeah. I always remember kind of meeting you in Gruel a couple of years ago when Gruel was kind of going. It was about 4 PM, and I was having a conversation in there with some other kind of like retrobates, and you were talking about the dossing hour. You were kind of, it was really interesting. You had this kind of thing about the dossing hour at 4 or 5 PM when all the musicians kind of would gather in that. When you got into chefing, was it like a natural bridge for you, or what got you into chefing in the first place?
It's quite similar to.
Duncan.
I'm really hungover, sorry. Duncan's experience, it was the same. I'd always been into food. Food wasn't a big thing in the family home, but as I got older and sort of started travelling with playing music and that and going to different places, it became more of a thing with me. And like the sort of record collecting and trying to find, and the constant buying and sourcing new music, old music, different music, it was the same with food. You wanted to make food better. You wanted to try recipes. They're quite similar in the sense that in order to go forward with music or food, you have to go backwards and learn all the classics and the basics. So that for me was, it took over then. It was just, I'm quite an extremist and I just sort of started delving my head into a lot of cooking and recipes and sourcing and asking questions about why things happened and to getting onto the technical aspects of it. So much so that a friend of mine who owned a couple of restaurants, which you just spoke with, just sort of said, you're going to have to get into a kitchen at some stage. So I did that, and it's probably the worst decision I've ever made. So I'm joking, it's probably the best decision I've ever made. It was incredibly hard, and being a little bit older, it's tough in the kitchen as well, especially coming from when you're traveling on your own but you organize your gigs and you have to go in and start at the bottom and you have people just sort of barking at you. Yeah. You're like, okay, yeah. Why did I do this again? Yeah. But then it sort of comes around and you realize how everything works, and it's just like that. Like, that's how I got into it. Yeah. I know I'm rambling because. Yeah.
I mean, Levi, from your point of view, I mean, when you started, I suppose, kind of making the sauces and appearing on Dragon's Den and kind of getting to that element, just as Billy's kind of explained about the similarities between music and him as a DJ and chefing, did you see similarities as well? I mean, had you experienced in the music business that you saw kind of similarities in with the food industry?
Well, usually with myself, I always take things a little bit to another level upwards. And for me, I'd always talked about something called the restaurant. Because that's what we named our stall at the carnival is about. And just after my experience in the Dragon's Den and became famous and all that, I decided to take the restaurant concept on the road. Now, this is about having a 12-piece band on stage and a cooker as well. So I literally, living the dream of actually merging music and food as a bit of a kind of a performance art. So I'd be like at the cooker with a 12-piece band on stage with, 25,000 people out there. And I'd be saying, I'd be singing a Bob Marley, "Stir it up, little Jarlin." And they said, "Well, this is how you do the rice and peas." And while the band is playing, proper, big sound. And I'm there with a mortar and pestle and doing it. So that was how experience of saying music shouldn't be separated from the food, because as my grandma used to say, that was it. Those two went together. Yeah. So we took it on tour with us. And this is what I like to call myself now, not a restaurant, but a restaurant. It actually involved music and food together.
Yeah. It also meant as well, Levi, that when you're on the road, you're the best catering going.
Absolutely. Because you've got the music as well. And there's nothing like a bit of vibe around the kitchen. And I think that's what keeps me going when I do the exhibitions. Because sometimes when you do a lot of exhibition, it can become boring if you have something else to offer, because everybody else does the same thing. But I think once I'm on stage and I've got my guitar as well, you're just telling me that I've got both the things that I love doing most on stage. I'm giving people the fullness of me, and I'm not giving them just the food. I want to give them both my experience, the music and the food together.
Yeah. Duncan, I'm curious as well about when you were on the road. You said earlier on that you started delving into more foods, and when you were into DJing in Japan, you got into that. Have you kind of found that people who run clubs and who are involved with clubs are pretty good when it comes to recommending food places, or can they be kind of occasionally dodgy because they're interested in other things?
I think you can't really classify those people as one type of thing. You see everything in people that work in music. You see people that are really into food, and the absolute opposite. But a lot of the time, a typical week for me, I'm in a random city in the world on a Saturday night, meeting a promoter I've never met before who says, "What do you want to eat?" So my kind of standard answer is something healthy, and something local, and then let's just see where it goes from there.
Are there any horror stories you want to kind of share with us?
Oh, there's always horror stories. Just end up with Burger King. I mean, that's a horror story. Yeah, when things go bad, that's what happens.
Have there been times though when like someone has kind of said to you like, this is definitely the best gaff in town, and when you go there, it's just like Jesus.
I can't think of that. I can think of the opposite, when people have really like bigged up somewhere, and I've got there and I was like, wow, that really, you were right about that. I mean, the most memorable meal I think I've ever had was in Japan, actually, in Tokyo. There was a big festival that Fatboy Slim put on, and he took all the DJs out for a meal to this special place, and it was one of these experiences that was, it was way more than just a meal. It was an experience, you know, like 30 courses, very theatrical. We all sat around the chefs, and they make a big show of it all and get everyone involved. But the food was, I mean, it was out of this world, and that's one of those things that just sticks in my head. Yeah.
I mean, Billy, when you started like working in the kitchens, did you find other musicians and DJs were interested as well, or had they already kind of like blazed a trail there?
Yeah, there are a lot of people that I would know who are friends of mine who are quite into food as well. I think over the past, I suppose, 10, 15 years, it has become more of a thing. People are realising that they should eat better, should eat healthier, should eat local. There's a lot more awareness now about food, so a lot more people are into food in general, I think, not just within the music business. But yeah, a lot of my friends would be into it. And then, of course, the other side of it is I also have a lot of friends who own and run restaurants and work in restaurants. But that becomes a different conversation about different stuff, like more technical stuff, and you start talking about suppliers and beef and where the beef come from, that sort of thing. Whereas with your friends, you're talking about recipes and food. Yeah. But yeah, like in general, a lot more people are into food, which is a great thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, like Levi, like, you know, you kind of like talked there earlier on about your grandmother in Jamaica and that, you know, and, you know, what part do you think, you know, like food has played in terms of like, I mean, the spread of reggae music?
Yeah, I think the best way I can explain that is recently I've been, you know, I talked about my restaurant, which we're opening in Westfield in November. So I was thinking of the soundtrack.
Westfield in London.
It was a fantastic thing, and I was really appreciated with that. But I was looking for the soundtrack for the restaurant, and I thought about this music and food thing, so we investigated reggae. And I was looking for to have maybe 20 or 30 hours of food songs to play in the restaurants. So I started to investigate reggae music and found actually nearly over 700 titles of reggae music to do with food, including Bob Marley did about 5 or 6 food, because he did Stir It Up, he did Guava Jelly, he did Guava Jelly, a song that was covered by many people, and quite a few others. He did One Cup of Coffee also. So, I mean, going into that and delving into see how many titles reggae are about food, it just made me think that this is actually a music about food, and our food have inspired Caribbean people. So it's brilliant that the lyrics that people, especially for people like Bob Marley, back in those days in the 60s and 70s, those were the type of things that inspired Jamaicans at the time, is singing about the country and the wonderful foods that we have to offer. So it was a great thing that the Highlanders merged these two things together, and I'm hoping now to take that forward in the restaurant. When people come in and have a bite to eat, they will actually be in tune to the food and the music together in tandem.
I just say it's so interesting to me that you're talking about that, because I've been doing exactly the same thing over the last few weeks.
Yes.
I also have a restaurant opening, and I'm working out the playlist for the restaurant.
Yes, yes.
So I've been doing exactly what you've been doing, but maybe in a more kind of hip-hop orientated,
yeah,
kind of music, and trying to find hip-hop songs that are about food,
yeah,
and finding exactly the same thing. And not just... And it works by locale of hip-hop as well. So the stuff from down south, you'd literally get songs about ribs and chicken and beer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, it does work like that. And working out music to play in a restaurant is something that's been on my mind as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great thing.
Where's your restaurant, Duncan?
In London as well, near Ladbroke Grove, a barbecue restaurant called Austin's. All low and slow, smoked, authentic ribs, chicken, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm curious as well, like, I mean, obviously you're spending the summer kind of like going around doing festivals. When you go to festivals, I mean, have you noticed the kind of the food side of things at music festivals, the quality to increase? Because, I mean, if you were DJing like 10, 15 years ago, it might have been the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as music festivals have just exploded, you know, you're right, 10, 15 years ago it was a kebab van and a burger van.
If you're lucky,
disco,
yeah,
biscuit.
Yeah. And there are actually places that are still like that. So the places that are kind of, you know, there's a real range of music festivals, but it tends to be that the ones that are more family orientated, more cultured, yes, you do get a really, really amazing selection of food these days.
Yeah. And like, you know, say with Austin's, I mean, is your plan with Austin's to always be a one-off, or are you kind of thinking, are you thinking expansion already?
Thinking about expansion already, yeah. We only opened last week, but it's everything's going great, so we're going to try and carry on with it. Yeah.
Okay, Billy. I mean, like, you know, say from your kind of point of view, you know, like over the years, you've had a chance to kind of like DJ in many different places. What kind of food? What meals for all three of you? What meals stand out in your mind?
Most of the meals that stand out are the ones. Great meals are much more than just the food, which is what we're talking about here. Like, terrible music in a restaurant will destroy whatever you're eating. Like terrible attitude from staff and that sort of thing. Everything amounts to what is in front of you. Also, great conversation, great friends, great wine. So a lot of the great meals that I've had aren't necessarily in restaurants or by great chefs, even though I have had. Some of them are just in people's houses where the food is great and the company is great. But what for me, one of the best meals I've had was in. I wasn't while I was DJing. Like, I'd flown there. There's a place called Arzac in San Sebastian in north of Spain. That was, for me, possibly the greatest meal I've had.
And Levi, what for you, what stands out in terms of, like, food and music memories?
Well, the best meal I actually ever had was up in the hills of Jamaica, where they call the Blue Mountain Hills. Because that's where the coffee, the famous Blue Mountain coffee, is from, 4,500 feet in the hills of Jamaica. And they do something up there called Ital food. And I explain that because Ital, which is I-T-A-L, which has nothing to do with Italy, by the way, it's a Rastaman's way of eating vegan. But it also says that it has to be locally sourced. So if you did went to a Rastaman's house up in the Blue Mountain Hills, everything comes from his own garden. He wouldn't dare cook you anything that came from the shop, or that he couldn't actually tell you the history of where it's from. He's going to tell you who grew it and, you know, where the seed came from, and all that history is within the food. Absolutely brilliant. And usually it is food to do with, again, music has to do with it, but it is a lot of sort of soups and things that you can boil. There isn't a lot of meat going on, obviously, because of that, but definitely a lot of locally sourced food. And that's where I've got the best food up in there. In the hills of the Blue Mountains. Yeah.
You mentioned Duncan earlier on, kind of like Fatboy Slim. What other kind of DJs and musicians have you met over the years who are like good foodies, who are like people like you kind of, who are good to kind of go for a nosebag with?
They're few and far between, actually. Yeah, I can only think of a couple of people, and they're probably not DJs that you would have heard of. There's one guy in Australia that I get on really well with, because I think Australia is very food and coffee and beer orientated, and that tends to be a place where people care more about that kind of thing. But in the UK, I don't think I can name you someone else that cares as much as I do. Yeah, it makes me feel like a bit of a pig.
What about you, Billy? Have you come across anyone else who's on the music tip, that who's a bit of a foodie, did you recommend?
Yeah, Luke, you know, the Unabombers have opened a bar and a restaurant now in Manchester. I'd be quite close with Luke. And the restaurant Volta won the best small newcomer in... I was on the Guardian's top 10 list. I think in Manchester, won the best small newcomer. But yeah, he's really into food, and we're talking about taking another holiday in September to go to San Sebastian. So yeah, Luke is very foodie oriented.
Yeah, cool. Okay, last question then, and thank you all very much for your time. I really appreciate it, because Levi's been very busy all day. Duncan's just finished his set, at 2 minutes before you started here, and Billy's in town as well. So it's great you came over and talked to us. Last question to you, what festival have you been to this year besides the Big Grill, where the food at the festival was top notch?
Well, for me, last week I did a festival in down in West Sussex called it's a Chili Fiesta, where everything is just completely blow your head off and just completely hot. And the fun thing is that you see all these sauces with these names, and they're all like, you know, devil's farts and devil's breath. And, you know, it's just the whole thing's about chili. But the thing is, it was just really an exciting do it. It really was. Because people that dig chilies are always special kind of people, you know, never boring. You know, always people that are exciting. So I really love that festival. I think it was called the West Dean Chili Fiesta in West Sussex. Loved it.
Excellent. Duncan?
I think the best festival for food that I've been at this summer has been Camp Festival in Dorset. That's very, very food orientated. But actually, I think my main kind of food music memory of this summer wasn't a festival thing. And it's something that's right up the street of what we're talking about, which was I've been working with some neuroscientists in Bristol doing experiments about music and food, which is exactly what we're talking about. And what we did was we hooked some subjects up with brain scanners, and I played music of a certain kind of genre whilst the chef cooked food of that type. So actually we did Jamaican food. I played a Jamaican set and he cooked jerk chicken. Then we did an Indian one where I played all Bollywood music and Bhangra and he made tandoori chicken. And the same for a kind of deep south thing with American hip hop and ribs and that. And we were monitoring this these people's brainwaves as they were eating the food, listening to music that corresponds with the food, as opposed to the opposite. So we're still waiting on the results of that, but there's going to be a YouTube video that explains it all in a couple of weeks' time, and that's really my great big music food moment for this summer.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. Mm-hmm. Billy?
I literally have had an incredibly boring summer. I haven't been to any festivals.
Okay, well you can get out there and check out the Big Grill right now. So listen,
I was just down. Well, the best food I've had so far is here. I had a great sandwich from 147. So,
one of Barry Stevens. Okay, thank you all very much, gentlemen, for your time, and a big round of applause for Billy, Duncan, and Levi. That concludes the activities here at the Banter Stage. Big, big thanks as well to George, the sound man, who's been keeping it real all weekend. So give him a round of applause. Thanks a million to Levi, Billy and Yoda for taking part. And thanks to Andy, Dan and all of the Big Grill for their help. This Banter podcast was produced and polished by series producer Tanya White. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate us and spread the word. Tell your friends about us, recommend us on your favourite social media network, leave a review or a rating on the iTunes store, and don't forget to subscribe. You can check out thisisbanter.com for news of what we're up to at Banter, and we'll be back next week with another podcast. Until then, goodbye and take care.